It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
All right. Yeah. I like it. My wallet's sitting here holding my phone too, so it's.
Well, it'd be even better if it all falls down. He's falling apart over here, everybody. All right, here we go.
Yeah.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Shuttle Drive. I'm your host, Wade Harrison, and today, looky here, who I have. I have my buddy Casey Jones, straight out of Canada, dropping knowledge down on me. You know, I'm looking up. I've been looking up to this guy now. Now I'm literally looking up to this guy. Well, today I'm looking over. Is he over here or over there? Yeah. But hey, Casey, buddy. How's it going, man?
Going well, man. Just finished a day of teaching kayaking and enjoying out by the Ottawa River. Just enjoying the great scene here. And now a cold beer.
Rough day. What kind of beer you got there in Canada?
So the beer that I'm drinking today is the Whitewater Brewing Company, and it's the Icebreaker IPA.
Wow.
So it's a very dry IPA. Yeah.
How about that, guys? Good. This guy has Whitewater. Not only does he live by the Ottawa, but he drinks Whitewater beer as he's looking at Whitewater. I'm on the White Zombie still. So I love
the White Zombie. I love the White Zombie, though. I miss it.
Well, you know, I don't know if it's legal or not, but I might bring some to you to Canada. What
a
way to get locked up at
border.
What did I get locked up in Canada for? I was trying to sneak
the
White Zombie.
I'll just wait to see you this fall.
Yeah. Well, yeah, man, it's good. It's good to see you again. Good to talk to you again. Yeah. And you definitely disappeared and became a Canadian citizen. So
that's what happens when you get locked down.
Yeah, so you know, you cross the border and now I have to sneak you back maybe somewhere. I'll sneak you back somewhere around Minnesota or somewhere, like pull you across.
They'll let me cross back across. It's just whether or not I can come back.
Well, yeah. Oh, once you come back, that's right. Once you come back here, you might not get back. So exactly. So kiss your fiance goodbye.
I know, right?
But yeah. Man, Casey, we'll get right into it. What, I'm familiar with the Wilderness Tours. Me and you have talked about that. Kind of tell me or tell the audience here, like, exactly what is the Wilderness Tours that you got going on up there?
Yeah, so Wilderness Tours is the rafting brand of the company that, I've moved up here and started working for. And then we operate also at the Ottawa Kayak School. But Wilderness Tours started in 1975 on the Ottawa River. So if you can imagine the rapids here on the Ottawa being done in 75, like fiberglass boats, but then also the rafting, right? Like even thinking about it from like a commercial rafting standpoint, that would be massive whitewater, which is super cool. And, the Ottawa River is easily one of the premier whitewater spots in the world, just from the standpoint of introduction to whitewater. And, it's really neat because you have features that in other rivers and other scenarios would be relegated to class 4 or above. You have them on day 2 or 3 of whitewater kayak classes, which is kind of cool.
And this is the Ottawa rafting paddling school.
Yeah. The Ottawa Kayak School.
Okay.
Yeah. But then Wilderness Tours as the rafting brand is, kind of like, NOC is to its area. It's the kind of the biggest, and it's definitely
in Canada, the entire country.
I would say it's definitely the biggest in this area, being Ontario. Whether it's the biggest in Canada or not, I couldn't speak to that honestly, but I would say it's approaching it if it isn't already. So,
well, it's definitely the best. It's got the best staff.
It's definitely got the best staff. Whether or not I'm included in that comment's another story.
Well, like all of my reviews, those are opinion based. So
those are definitely opinion based. Your opinion might not mean much then.
Yeah. So in my opinion, they have the best staff. So when does the Ottawa Paddling School, that's the Keeners program, right?
Ottawa Kayak School has, so the Ottawa Kayak School has a couple of different branches within it. The Kayak School operates regular kayak classes, like beginner, intermediate, and then we run high-end programs, and we also have kids programs as well. And then we have high-end programs for kids that we call the Little Rippers program. So
I've heard of that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so ages under 12 years old. So that's, you know, if you have a Little Ripper that is not quite old enough for keeners, we do have a week-long program for those kids.
Under 12, so how young? Can it go down to like 18 months? How young?
our youngest is 6, so wow. In those programs.
Yeah. In the whitewater. So, wow.
Yeah, in the whitewater. And we have a kids program as well, with 6 being the youngest as well. Then when it comes to the teens, we have teen camps as well. And then where the keener question that you ask is kind of like the high end level of the teen program. And that is a 3-week program that's run here on the Ottawa River. This past year, we ran a US based version of that as well, because of the closures of the borders. And since that hadn't opened back up again, we ran a US based keeners and a Canadian based keeners, just because of.
Where was the US base set, by the way?
It was actually set up on the new Ingalli River.
That's what Stephen Wright and Clay were working with, right?
So Stephen, yeah. Clay, and then we also had David Silk and Eli Castleberry, mm-hmm. and Anna Bruno. So just an all-star crew working.
That's a solid crew right there, guys.
Oh, it was fantastic. And they had a really good time, and they ran 3 2-week sessions there. And then on the Ottawa this year, we had Caleb Grady head coaching and Tyler Curtis coaching the Keener program, which was a 3-week and traditionally is a 3-week program here. So mm-hmm. the Keener program is exceptional. And then for adults, we again have beginners, intermediates. And then we have an advanced program that we call Adult Keeners. And it follows the same principles as the 3-week Keener program, but is condensed down into either a 1-week or 2-week program.
How often a year do you give that class, that Keeners thing? Is that a one time a year thing, like seasonal?
So the Keeners program, like the teenagers program, there are 3 separate sessions, and then there's an early session / competition session.
Mm-hmm.
So there are 4 different sessions, but they're all, except for the comp week, are all 3 weeks each. So. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Wow. So
there are 3-week, there are 3-week programs for the teenagers. And yeah.
I'm guessing that it's pretty seasonal up there. I mean, I know someone like you paddle year round, but do you stay in Canada?
I'm scared of the cold. I'm scared of the cold.
I am not a fan of it. Know,
to paraphrase Joel Kowalski, there's a period of time when you're paddling on the river in the spring where you're doing what's called house cat paddling. You're just steering around the big waves, trying not to get splashed in the face.
So you actually go around them instead of like,
you're definitely like trying to stay warm. You know, the first time Joel took me paddling in the spring with Katie, my fiance, we went walking across the ice to get to the river, part of the frozen river.
Okay.
That sounds interesting. It was from someone from the south. It was kind of scary to me because
you're thinking I'm gonna fall in everything I've ever
seen in movies, people fall through the ice and die.
And they're stuck under it, and all you see is their face and the bubbles.
I know. And this was before the code and all that bow rocker that was gonna pull me up out of there, you know.
Yeah. Oh wow. Yeah, that's definitely something that in the southeast, for anyone that's living in the south or people that listen, we do get frozen lakes and our rivers will freeze up on the side. It does get cold, but forget about walking across it. I'm not walking across any river down here in the southeast, even though it looks like it's fine. You'd get halfway, just like you said, right through, and then you're stuck. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So what do you do during the winter? I guess you just shut down all operations and board up everything and go inside.
In the fall time, when we finish the rafting season, we actually operate and help with an outdoor college programs, outdoor skills. So rafting, oar rigging, whitewater kayaking, whitewater canoe, rock climbing.
This skiing, is in the winter?
Et cetera. Yeah, this is in the winter. The staff of WT help operate those programs for Algonquin College, the local college here.
Oh, that's
so
awesome.
We actually do the outdoor education, the actual hard skills. Our staff teach those hard skills as well.
Yeah. Are you trying?
We do that into the fall, and then obviously it changes over into winter sports like cross country skiing, downhill skiing, snowboarding, et cetera.
Well, I guess that is good that you can kind of do that there. You can kind of plan that and just evolve to whatever they need.
Now, for me personally, as soon as it starts to snow, I try to leave and go south.
You're going to Hawaii again. You're going to Hawaii again.
I am definitely going to Hawaii again.
If you guys get a chance, go over to Casey Jones. Was it Casey Bryant Jones YouTube? What is your actual YouTube channel name? Is it just your name?
You know, it's my name on everything. So
he has a good video where he went down to Hawaii. Definitely that. I think you did that last winter, right?
Yeah, last winter. So we wrapped up here, and I think I made it back to North Carolina in the beginning of December, and then paddled for a few weeks.
We paddled together when you were here. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we did. And then went to Hawaii, and exceptional experience.
It looks amazing. And
yeah, it's incredible how good that white water is. You know, it definitely rivals like a Rio Claro in Chile from the standpoint of just, you know, spectacular waterfalls, basalt rock, like just gorgeous. Yeah, I mean, for those that are familiar with both places, Joel being one of them, you know, it's like the same style and same love of that style of whitewater can be found in Hawaii, but you have 2-day Amazon shipping. There's Starbucks 2 minutes from, you know, the put in, you know,
you Americans and your creature company. Well, you Canadians and your, like you're already doing it. I think you just said, oh God, he's gone. We've lost him.
Yeah,
come back to Georgia.
And so you can also, you know, finish, and there's down at the bottom of the river, you're paddling into the Pacific Ocean and walk across the street, and there's a bar.
That's so awesome. Sushi your places. Video looks amazing. Like,
you know, it's wild. Yeah.
The scenery there is just immaculate too.
Yeah, it's very interesting. You know, Hilo, the city of Hilo, is actually the rainiest city in the United States. Obviously, it's not part of the lower 48, but of all the cities in the U.S., it's the rainiest city. And so what's interesting is Joel collected a lot of information on rainfall and things of that nature, and was able to correlate that through the coldest months of the year. That's when Hilo just happens to be its rainiest, which means that the river is running very often. So it works out
pretty well. Let's get to, so yeah, obviously Hawaii, you know, I guess they do have some snow melt somewhere.
There is a little bit of snow that falls up on the top of Mauna Kea, which is the big volcano on the island of Hawaii. But, all of this that's falling into the river is mostly rain. You know, it's not necessarily snow melt. So,
and knowing that type of geography, I'm guessing you have to be very cautious of extreme flooding. It can rise while you're sitting there. I think you posted a video or something. It rose just like that. I don't know if it was you, but I seen a video of Hawaii and it was like, it was here, and they actually, it just went like a massive waterfall in a matter of like a minute.
Yeah. So, you know, we never like were on the water, you know, when it was raining, right? Like we did not make efforts to go paddling while it was raining because of the significance of the flooding that's there. Like the Wailuku actually stands for water of destruction. That's what it means in Hawaiian. And so there's a lot of fear and respect and reverence, you know, around that river. And you'll hear people tell stories about growing up swimming there, and they were told by their grandparents that, you know, you don't go swimming if you can't see the Kea, you know, like if you can't see the volcano, don't go swimming, right?
Because of the rainfall. Is that what he's talking about? So
exactly.
In the background, it could be raining, but it's raining, you know,
but it could be
upstream.
Sunny. Yeah. It could be sunny, but then, you know, at the top of the volcano, it might be raining. Right. So
that's crazy.
So one of the more interesting things that happened, and we saw the storm coming, we were, you know, staying on top of the radar and everything, and knew a big storm was coming, and we paddled the river at maybe 100 or 80 CFS, you know, which was a great level and super fun and super low consequence in the grand scheme of things. And, got up the next morning and it was running 10,000 CFS
in just overnight
10,000 CFS.
And what would you consider high? 500
High would be, geez, like I would say if you're getting like above 250, it would start getting and feeling high.
Whoa, 250. Yeah. And it was 10 grand. God, I can only imagine some of the holes.
Just I mean, there's
terminal hydraulics, I bet.
Yeah, remind me to send you some iPhone videos I have from 10,000. Like we were kind of walking around the overlook areas of the river and we're just kind of blown away with how much water was going through there. So,
wow.
But yeah, it's there's not a lot of space for the river to flow through, right?
It looks very like very narrow passages from what I've seen in videos. It is a very narrow creek and everything looks like it just goes.
Yeah, everything definitely goes. There's definitely a few places that at high water, if you had an issue, it would be a big issue.
Yeah.
There's one is super fun, is probably one of, you know, my particular favorite, you know, rapids on the run. But what's interesting about it is the left wall of one of these rapids is actually undercut. And at more normal flows, you kind of got this sweeping drop going into a big boof off of the
right
side.
What river is this?
The Wailuku.
Okay.
So technically in Hawaii, the Wailuku is the only river. Everything else is classified as a stream. So
I didn't know that.
It's the only river.
Today's knowledge nugget from my Canadian buddy, Casey Jones.
I'm not Canadian. I'm still a U.S. citizen.
Yeah, I'm still Canadian enough for me anyway. Okay. Is it Canadian bacon or is it ham?
No, man. We still eat real bacon here. Come on.
Not Canadian bacon.
Not Canadian.
You seen any grizzly bears yet?
No grizzly bears. No, seen some black bears, but I don't think there's any grizzlies in Ontario. So,
how about moose?
I could be wrong, but I haven't personally seen any moose, but I've seen photos of some moose that are just a little bit north of here. So, lots of deer though. One of the cooler stories that I can tell is I was doing a spring lap with Katie, my fiance, and Caleb Grady, and we were paddling down. I guess the river was maybe 17 feet on the gauge or so, 18 feet on the gauge. So it was decently high. We are going into a rapid called the Normans, and we're just below a place called Lunch Stop Waves, which are like the perfect kickflip waves. I mean, they're just perfectly green, very steep on the backside, like, if you want to learn how to kickflip, best kickflip waves. Bunch of back-to-back ones. And I'm paddling behind Caleb. I'm always questioning how good of a kayaker I am because I'll see him throw one way. And then as he goes up the face of the next wave, he's throwing one the opposite way. Okay.
Of course.
You know, we're paddling down and we see something in the water and we don't know quite what it is. And sure enough, it's a deer swimming across the top of this rapid called the Normans. And what's interesting about the Normans is you have this big V tongue that's coming together. And all this water is folding down on top of itself, but it's rock walls on both sides. So you get these massive boils just for probably 50 yards below the rapid. And if you were to swim in that, it would be awful. And you'd likely go into the next rapid below it called Coliseum. And at those flows, Coliseum is a very
Videos. Yeah, I've seen videos. Yeah. It looks pretty stout.
So you're swimming across the river above this rapid and Caleb Grady does this massive U shape around the deer and like drives it back to bank and it goes scrambling up the bank and back.
So he bulldozed it like a boat.
Basically.
Did he hook a tow tether to it?
No tow tethers. No,
he didn't hook a tow tether to its antler and pull it to the shore.
No.
If you would have told me that, you would have swayed my opinion of a tow tether. If you would have said, I've got a use for a tow tether. I've seen Caleb McGrady pull a fully grown buck to the bank with a tow tether.
If Caleb Grady had done that, Caleb Grady would be my hero. But
especially if you would have got that on GoPro, if I would have seen a video of pulling a deer to the bank. Yeah. And one thing, on that story, what you were talking about, the kickflips, you went to Canada and I guess down on the Fuda also, and then I paddled with you again and your kickflip had changed.
Yeah,
I watched you kickflip, and me and you are probably a lot alike too. You kind of analyze different, you just watch somebody and kind of explain to people like what you look for into getting a good solid kickflip. You were explaining to me about talking to Tom Dolchik. How do you say Tom's last name? That young kid,
Tom Dole.
Dole. And just watching those guys, how they use the power face, correct? Or so, they load it and use the power. Go ahead, you explain it, because you definitely, your kickflip game had changed. And it, and I'm not going to say I was envious, but I was real envious. I'd love to get up there and just like on the rapids like that, because I think you could dial it in so much cleaner.
Oh, it's a lot. I mean, I think a lot of it comes down to having a big, steep, tall wave that has a steep drop off on the back of it. I think that's first and foremost. And I think one of the real big things that I'd seen was actually watching specifically Dane, Caleb, and Bryn. The very first year I went to Chile, I got to go with those guys over to the Fui while Dane and Caleb and Adrian and Bryn were all down visiting. Caleb was actually helping coach a what's it called? He was helping not basketball. Speaking of which, we still have to play basketball. That hasn't happened yet, but
it will.
He was coaching. Yeah, he was coaching.
You're getting soft in Canada.
I know, right? He was coaching a gap year program or a college credits program.
Oh, okay.
It was centered around kayaking, and it was something that David Hughes had set up. It was a Patagonia study abroad is what it was called.
Yeah, okay.
And so I was along helping and shooting photos and video and things like that. And one of the biggest things that I was seeing from them is, previously my understanding of the kickflip was you paddle as hard up a wave as you can and you back deck roll at the very top. Yeah.
Like this guy. Like
that was my understanding. And what I was seeing these guys do basically is I'm going up the face of a wave. I'm thinking about trying to take a giant boost stroke at the top of the wave. I'm literally trying to reach over the top of the wave on that boost stroke.
Past the peak. So you have the peak of the wave. You're wanting to reach past the peak or before the peak?
I'm reaching for the peak of the wave, like trying to stab it in right at the peak of the wave.
So right where the wave peaks, you want to go a straight vertical stroke down, like a pull stroke. Okay.
And what I'm thinking about doing is as I pull my legs up out of the water and try to get them up as high as I can, I'm almost thinking about a double pump motion, right? So like a wave wheel motion going over the top of the wave. But instead of simply throwing your legs back down underneath you, I'm prying off the back face of the blade. So not the power face, but the back face of the blade.
I can see that.
Yeah. And in doing that, the motion feels more like a wing over than it does a necessarily like a kick flip or an air screw type of motion.
Yeah, because I think, me and you were paddling and I think it might've been the Gali or something. And I just noticed you were nailing these, like your kick flips were getting more aerial and they were nailing. And I was able to get it like once or twice, but and I was trying to see what you were doing. So now you've got me a good, better understanding, but I just wanted to get you've been doing a bunch of too.
I think like, honestly, while it's a high consequence move, there's really only one great wave, in my opinion, maybe two great waves on the Ocoee River that are like super steep that make it easy to dial it in. When you're like really trying to learn and dial it in, learn where that point of no return with the rise of your bow is, as you're trying to get that big disconnect, because again, the idea is trying to get your bow as high up in the air as you can before you start to drop your feet back down into that wave wheel motion. And then once your feet start to drop, that's where you're prying off the back of the blade. So,
okay.
And then, kind of flicking your hips over top of your head.
Well, yeah.
But again, like the steeper the wave is, the easier it is to feel that point of disconnect happen, right? Whereas like if you have a smaller wave and, whoever else, like your Nick Troutmans and Danes are going to be able to do those type of kick flips there. But I definitely think having a bigger feature that's easy to lap.
I think even guys like that, I think they perfected it on the bigger stuff first. I think they perfected the technique on bigger waves, and then it just translated, because I noticed your kickflip definitely improved a lot. It's like
I got super lucky. I got to film those guys while we were on the Fui, and one of the places that we filmed had this really incredible curling wave. And it just so happened that where I was shooting, the curling wave was right curling towards me. Mm-hmm. And so I could see what was happening with their paddle. So while I was getting to shoot this cool video, I was also getting an opportunity to watch it in slow motion, frame by frame.
You got to really break it down with your, Yeah, there you go.
And so it really made a lot of sense. And then, you know, as I was trying to dial it in further, you know, obviously there are people like Caleb and Tino Spate that are like, just, they're great paddlers, but they're also great instructors, like world-class instructors. And so they've got like this detect and correct, like one word fix for everything.
Yeah.
It's, you know, which is really cool. So
that's awesome. Yeah. Thanks for breaking that down. You know, I can always talk, you know, downriver freestyle stuff. And I'm still on the, you know, and like you said, here in the Southeast, we don't have like a wide variety of waves unless like the Nolichucky blows up like it did. I think it got to like 30,000. So there's going to be some waves there that you could probably hit. And, but it, you know, we've got a window about that big. So yeah, I'm still on the camp where, you know, mostly I go to the top and I do a fast back deck roll. I've got a very quick, powerful back deck roll. So I just throw it and I land them. It just doesn't feel as clean as what you were talking about. I can definitely see that technique. I'm going to work on that.
You come visit me then. You come visit me.
They won't let me in Canada. I'm probably banned in Canada. And I don't even know it. I'm trying to think of anything. Who knows?
We'll put you in the car. We'll put you in the car with Katie. She's so sweet and innocent looking. You'll be able to get in.
Yeah. I'm not sweet and innocent looking. What?
No, you're not.
well, there you go. You know, at least this guy tells you the truth, whether you like it or not, he's going to lay it on you. Yeah, man. What else? Let's see. What boat are you currently paddling? I did see that you might have recently got the new Dagger Code medium. You paddle on the medium, correct?
I am. So I actually got both a large and medium, but
you go both ways. Nice.
Yeah, so I have some lofty ambitions or dreams to try to go to the Stikine, hopefully in the next year or so. Learning to paddle the large and learning to paddle it with some gear is going to be something that I'm looking to try to do in the spring while I'm here, especially in big water, and just trying to get comfortable with that idea. So that's a lofty goal. Whether or not I actually achieve it, I don't know, but at least mentioning it to you, you're going to kick my ass if I don't do it.
Oh, I'm going to bring it up to you about every time I see you. So how's that Stikine trip going, buddy?
I know,
right? I'm working on it. So, that's what people do to me all the time. So you actually have a medium and large for the fact that you want to put overnight gear and things like that. That's why you have the large. Cause you're like 165.
No, man, I'm 180. 185. Yeah.
I guess you really have been hitting that Canadian bacon up there.
I've always been at least 180, man.
The good thing about you though, you're 185, but I think you're 6'2".
I'm 6 foot even. So.
Yeah. Well, damn. Yeah. I underestimated your weight and overestimated your height.
No, it's just my personality that makes me feel so big, right?
Oh, you're big in personalities. So big. That is true. Yeah. Yeah. We need to get that hair in a man bun while you're out in that large also.
Oh no, it's I actually wore it down hoping that you wouldn't mention a man.
Yeah. Yeah. I want you to put a hole in the top of your helmet and pull it out.
Oh my god. I'll get an old Wild Water helmet and just like
I'd get love
like
to
a
see.
Big three quarter inch like drill bit and just go for it.
That would be awesome with it in a tight bun. Yeah. So which one do you prefer the most? Like
I haven't gotten to paddle the large yet.
Okay.
In the wrapper? It's actually still in South Carolina. So
you want me to deliver it? I'm on my way.
I actually asked them to hold on to it just because, you know, shipping does cost a lot and then international shipping costs more. And it didn't really make sense to have the large up here. We're in summer flows now, so it's not like the water's high. And then
you're already building an excuse for that Stikine trip.
I know, right? I'm working on it. But I did want the medium, you know, to get used to paddling it and getting to, you know, play around with it a little bit. So far, like initial impressions, very impressed with the boat. I mean, I spent very little time in the Mamba, so I didn't really have preconceptions. I do totally understand the deck lines though, because if you come from a Mamba, that boat looks like a Mamba in deck lines, you know, while
it really does, don't it?
Shape is different. It's definitely different. But like from a standpoint of like, if the Mamba is your like comfort zone, if you're coming from that boat, like the boat's going to look the same. It I'm sure it's going to paddle vastly different.
You were coming from a Phantom, correct? That was kind of like your creek boat of choice.
Yeah, so the Phantom is what I'd been paddling, and there, you know, like I had spent a fair amount of time in it. I got to spend a season down in Chile working at the Pukong Kayak Retreat there, paddling it, and then took it out to Hawaii. And I, you know, it's been a good boat. It's you know, very different. It's funny how different it and the Nirvana are from one another.
You know, really is, ain't it? I paddled both of them too. Yeah.
Yeah. They're both 9-foot racing creek boats, right? Like that was the design purpose for both of those boats. And it's amazing how different each boat is from one another, but how each boat does things better than the other as well. And I guess that's to be expected with a different design, but, and how different they paddle, right? Like the, you know, the Phantom is definitely, there are some growing pains switching to it, just having been accustomed to one style of boat and one style of paddling. Yeah. From some advice from Steve Augustine about like where he had his seat placed and how he liked it, I took that advice and moved the seat around and moved some things around.
Oh, I want to hear this. So on the Phantom, where do you run your seat? I can tell you where I run mine. You know where I run mine? All the way back, baby.
All the way back?
I'm like an El Camino coming down there, low riding.
Mine was about 3/4 of the way back. So,
there you go. See, you're hearing it right here, everybody. So everybody that hears about the Phantom, what I had found, and Casey might back me up on this, and that's funny, a lot of people move their seat forward, and I actually moved my seat back because I found that it helped me go off of that tail a little better and able to place that bow where I wanted it. Is that, can you?
Yeah, I felt like I was able to break it off of that Mach 10 speed out of drops faster. That way I felt like I could steer it from the back end of the boat, and I could, you know, do hanging draws or gliding draws, whatever terminology you want to use. I felt like I could use those more effectively when the seat was back. Definitely took a while getting used to how narrow the boat was in comparison to the Nirvana.
Coming out of Nirvana, that's a big, it really is. I came out of Nirvana too. It's a big change, dude.
But one of the things that I found, especially being down in Chile, you know, we had a low water Rio Claro year of the year that I switched from the Nirvana to the Phantom. I was amazed at how much softer the Phantom lands. So
it is kind of like, for people listening, you know, I did an on-water review on the Phantom too, and I kind of went over this, that this Phantom is kind of like a hybrid, like semi-planing into, it's, I guess you'd call it a semi-planing displacement, where it's like, it's not perfectly flat. It's actually flattened out and then rounded up. And that thing is very smooth coming off drops. Given that, you know, we'll go back on the code here in a minute, but given where the code's a lot more flatter, I think, up there than the Phantom, and it helped that kind of craziness, like you just mentioned about that hanging draw stroke. You better have that in with the Phantom. You better have it in. And you know, me and you before we started recording, you know, Casey, we're talking about, you know, about driving that code. So go ahead and let's get on that code about what you were talking about, driving that baby. And now, just for everybody, you're paddling in the Ottawa region, so it's big water. So
paddling on the Ottawa River, and you know, it's very different. You know, paddling through crashing waves and paddling through alternating angled waves as well, right? And regardless of the boat that you're in, you kind of get buffeted around by those big waves. You get moved around a little bit left, right, depending on what you are. One of the things that was evident was that you wanted to have an active paddle blade in the water paddling the code. It's just that, you know, that bow rocker, when it had like direction and speed, works really well. It just climbs over everything. I, you know, there were two instances, one where I went through a feature called Phil's Hole. I went through the right side of it, and
I lost your audio. Funny, I mean, I lost your video. There you are. Right, he's back. He went to sleep mode, guys. It's past his bedtime. The phone's telling him. He just had an alarm go off that it's time to go to bed. Probably get your water.
Actually, that went off at 8:45, believe it or not.
Okay, there you go. All right.
There's a feature called Phil's Hole. And a few weeks ago, we had some unseasonably high water because of a couple of big storms that came through. And so we were back at roughly 9 feet on the gauge. This time of year, -1 to -3 is kind of normal. Give you an idea of how much higher it is.
I would say that's higher
than normal. Yeah, so we got back into some big waves, and, you know, it was pretty funny. I was just kind of curious. I took a kind of a sweeping boost stroke going into it and hadn't really even taken strokes much else on flat water, but could feel that the stern wanted to load real easily on that code. And so I felt confident trying it, and I just kind of squirted through the feature and didn't get a single splash in my face, and just kind of started laughing hysterically. And I was like, wow, this is ridiculous. But, you know, that is a double-edged sword, right? Like, I just said that that bow works really well when it has direction and that blade is purposefully used in the water. But I think if you're in big white water and you're trying to float straight through a wave train, not necessarily placing yourself for a ferry, but just like if you're trying to just zone out, your bow is going to find the path of least resistance really quickly because of how much bow rocker there is there. So I think that's a fair assessment.
I think so. And it's awful. And you probably noticed this too. It's pretty wide up in front of the knees, the width. I had Snowy on and he talked about that. And, you know, kind of like me and you both have had some experience with the Waka OG. And to me, it kind of had that Waka, like, I don't know, that kind of, it's hard to describe people that haven't paddled the OG, but the OG had this, like, it's like a softer OG to me. More, I would say not softer, it's more refined. Like they like a refined OG. What do you think?
I mean, I'll put it this way. I don't think I've paddled in both particular instances. I don't think I've paddled a boat that was more predictable, right?
Yeah, like, that's true.
I knew what was going to happen, right?
That's a good
assessment. You can feel the boat. Yep. If the boat starts to slide, you can feel it sliding before it reaches a point of no return, right? Because again, with that bow rocker, the correction strokes are easier because there's less like surface tension on the boat. It's easier to swing the boat back around, especially with that big flat space underneath the seat and right behind the seat. So that was one of the big things that I really liked, is I could make corrections really quickly. Catching eddies was really interesting in that boat too, because you have to really put the boat way up on edge to get that rail to kick in. But once it kicks in, it goes. I mean, it took a second for me because I, you know, I've been paddling a rewind and you don't have to go very far to find that edge. You just kind of like,
maybe like that with the rewind.
Yeah. And so you get into that boat and, you know, I felt like I was going all the way over on the sidewall of the code for a bit, you know, just mentally to try to find that edge. But what's amazing is you get up on that edge and then you find this like secondary wall that just feels like you can't cause the boat to flip over on, you know. And it's kind of wild to have a sidewall like that you can just lay out on. It was really funny. I just kept finding myself, like the last few times I paddled it, finding the biggest wave I can find and leaning over as far as I can, ear dipping off the top of the wave, trying to get it to disconnect as far as I can. So it's been a fun boat to play with, and I'm really looking forward to getting on at Creek. But man, like the bow rocker and that rails do really well in big boils. Yeah. But again, it's about paddling your boat with purpose, right? And regardless of what boat you're in, if you're not paddling with purpose, it's not going to do what you want it to do.
There we go. That's his mantra, paddle with a purpose. I agree, because anyone that watched my on-water review, one of the things I like it when I talk to another kind of like what I see as a high level paddler like yourself. And, you know, I agree with you totally, because when I first like initially did the review, one of the things that I found, you have to lean it. I'm serious, dude. I had to get like that. And you know, for people listening, I've got my hand up and it's like almost completely on edge when I started finding that rail. It was like an Easter egg in a video game. It was like something you're like, wow, what was that? And after I found it, my leans became so much more aggressive, way more aggressive on my leans than what I normally would do.
Think MotoGP motorcycle riders laying it down on one knee.
Laying it down on the pucks, baby.
That's what it felt like. It felt like you're really whipping it around, but it's also really a high reward move as well. Like when you put your boat up on the edge and you feel confident doing that, some of these lean boosts, some of these like transitional moves that we have to make as we paddle harder creeks, that's going to be something that will give people more confidence moving into some of those moves as well, I think.
Yeah.
So
your boat of choice here recently, I know you really like the rewind too.
Yeah.
That's been kind of like your half slice of choice, right? And me and you both have a lot of experience with the antics.
Yeah. So Yeah, the rewind here, especially, we have big eddy lines, right? Like we've got some really, really fun, deep eddy lines. And obviously the Jimmy Cup is held here. So it's good for squirt boating. It's definitely going to be
the Jimmy Cup for people listening is a squirt boat competition, one of the top in the world, right? Maybe the top in the world. You win the Jimmy Cup, you're beast mode.
Yeah, basically, if you win Jimmy Cup, it's as good or better than world championships.
There you go, guys. All right, for whatever that means, by the way.
But,
we're not squirt
boaters.
With
that, though, we have a lot of crazy, awesome eddy lines and seams. It's crazy, Wade. You're just paddling through flat water, nothing but flat water, and you'll just see this boil line pop up. And it's like the best, strongest eddy line on the Ocoee River, and you can just drop your stern down into it and start throwing stern squirts in the middle of the river off of the boil line. You know, it's pretty.
And that's where that rewind excels, right? Because of the longer length in the tail over like a shorter tail of the antics.
You know, it feels more balanced as you're up on end, especially when you're kind of twirling around on end on those big, powerful eddy lines. It definitely feels like it balances better. And to your point, you know, from Gen 1 antics to Gen 2 antics, you know, the Gen 2 performs better than the Gen 1. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm sure the Ripper performs super well. I haven't spent a lot of time in the Ripper, but
it's good.
I'm sure it would perform like it well as well. So
you don't have one. So I know you haven't spent a lot of time in one, or you would own one.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? No, I'm pretty happy with that rewind, to be honest with you. It's
a pretty solid boat.
Oh man, it's really neat to paddle a boat that you really don't like. I mean, I got to take a prototype down to Chile, which was awesome. I mean, only when I was running stuff that made me really nervous was I opting to paddle the Phantom. I just got to the point where the rewind was all I was paddling on most things.
And I remember talking to you about that, how you were like, the rewind in the Chile was so good. You came back and you're like, dude, that boat is so good down there. The bow rocker, the tail, the way you can initiate that tail and that bow rocker is there when you need it. You're like, the combination is very good, which is really good because I'm doing like a half slice kind of like lineup on that. And the rewind's one of my top half slices ever, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, the thing that I like the most about it, too, is the leg position and knee position. You know, one qualm that I have with, like, having your knees super wide is how hard it is on your hip flexors, how uncomfortable it can be. And, you know, back to your point, we've both spent a lot of time in the first gen antics, and your legs were splayed out super wide. And I remember a few golly marathon laps with you where feet came out and we were paddling flat water with the skirts off.
What it does to me, it hurts my knees. What happens to me, it puts my knee in like a weird position, the way the foot to the knee height.
Yeah.
It hurts my knees. Like, and that's what hurts me the most. Go ahead.
Yeah. The flip side of it though, is when your legs are that wide, you have a lot of power too. I mean, it's a double-edged sword. It's like
a lot of power for play moves, not downriver speed.
Yeah, not for downriver speed, but for, you know, play moves and stern squirts, you know, pulling those, crunching those knees up to your chest, that's a more powerful position. So, you know, like it's a double-edged sword.
I would agree with that it's definitely a better, like, for, like, you know, all those downriver play moves. But if you're trying to, like, charge, like, downriver, it's not as comfortable for me anyway. I like my knees in more upright. That's where the Ripper does really well, too.
One of the things that I did really like, though, about the rewind is, again, you know, you had a little bit of deck peaking, so like the water sheds off either side, your knees are higher, the boat's narrower, and, you know, I love those quick transitions edge to edge that you can do in that boat because of how narrow it is.
And what all boats do you guys have there? Is it all like Dagger or Jackson, or
so
what? You have any Titans? You got a full fleet of Titan nymphs?
No Titans.
Prion Pikes.
So personally, you know, I've got a Dagger Quiver. For the Ottawa Kayak School, we are a Jackson Super School. And, you know, the decision comes purely from the fact that, number one, this is the best freestyle river in the world. And when it comes to freestyle kayaking and freestyle kayak construction, you can't come to a better place just because of the nature of the river. You know, in the summertime when we've got all these incredible features in, you have incredible waves backed up by giant flat lakes, you know? So it's great for instruction. And so a lot of people do come here to learn how to play boat. You know, I don't think you would argue against the point that Jackson makes the best freestyle kayak currently on the market.
I would not argue that. I would lose 100% of the time if I tried to argue a Jitsu over the Rockstar.
Yeah.
Rockstar, you know, 100.5 or whatever. I don't, how many versions
so,
are they?
So, you know,
now?
When it, they're on Gen 4. Okay. You know, with that, the fourth generation Rockstar is, you know, a better boat than the Jet.
I liked
it's a better
it.
Boat than
I did.
The
I liked
Dagger
it.
Jitsu.
I paddled yours. I liked it.
You know, Daggers. Yeah. And the Dagger Jitsu, you know, like they only make the 5.9 now. They've committed to making the medium size. And I think that was.
What? They dropped the 6.0?
Yep.
Oh, I'm done. I'm done. That's it. I need to call Scott right now. Where's my phone? I'm calling Scott on air. Dude, you just told me something I didn't even know. I love the 6.0 Jitsu because I think me and you both love that more volume.
Scott actually just sent me a bright yellow 6.0.
I love the yellow too. Oh, old yeller.
Yeah.
God.
I've been asking for yellow. I would love to start a petition and get a Dagger yellow again. So.
Dude, yeah, don't get me started on colors. I'm getting Scott on and I've got a hammer coming down on him on Dagger colors.
Oh man. I think he'll be able to provide you with some welcome news. So
I've already had some conversations with him. So yeah, but the Dagger, my Jitsu was yellow. Jitsu
nice.
I had was yellow. That was one of my favorite boats of all time. And is it, you know, maybe you can back me up on this. I haven't spent as much time in like the spud boats as you have. It was the one of the most well-rounded spud boat. It reminded me of the Rewind in a way. It just did everything good, but it didn't like, compared to like the Rockstar, you know, the Rockstar excels over it in certain categories, but I love the way the Jitsu 6.0 paddled. I just love that boat.
So I haven't spent a ton of time in it yet. As we're in the crux of our season, teach a little bit of play boating, but here recently our beginner courses, you know, I definitely love teaching beginner courses and, you know, I like the Joe Gudger approach to teaching beginners. I don't want a consummate beginner. I want to take somebody kayaking someplace really cool one day when they come and take a course. That's my goal. You know, that's one reason I keep jumping back in on these beginner courses is because I love them and love getting people addicted to the sport. But
freestyle or just downriver or just a little bit of everything.
Just actually like true beginner courses, right? Like we're putting people in the water for their first time, teaching them how to roll,
how to wet exit.
And then we're running them all the way down the middle channel of the Ottawa River on day 4 and 5. So
you got a whole stock of high and dries there?
No high and dries.
I got a
guy. You learn to roll or you swim.
I got a guy. I got a hook
up. I'm sure you
do.
You know, not everyone is as manly as you. And I will admit to the fact that I am not man enough to paddle with one of those. So while I'm sure I could use it.
I would recommend do not ever start somebody out kayaking into that. And that's coming straight from my mouth right now.
So the 6.0. The difference really that one of the biggest differences is it's a lot shorter than the new large 4.0 Rockstar. It feels a lot shorter anyway. And the one welcome change in jumping back into the Jitsu from being in the Rockstar is the knees are definitely not as tall and the boat doesn't feel quite as wide as the large Rockstar. So it feels more like a medium large boat. It doesn't feel like a true large.
That's crazy. That you mentioned that. 6.0. That's exactly how I described that boat. It does not feel, even though it's the 6.0 and it's the big boys boat, you know, at the time, you know, I was like 165, 170 and it felt spot on for me. And dude, at my weight, I could really get some massive loops in that thing, flat water loops and just loops. It was, and it paddled the river very good too. It was a really good down river boat.
No, I've definitely enjoyed paddling it and I'm looking forward to learning the boat more and getting to paddle it more. But, you know, to the point of, and you know how it is, like you're running a YouTube channel doing reviews on new boats because people love new gear and love getting to try new gear out. And so, you know, for us, you know, the 4.0 has only been around for a couple of years, whereas, you know, the Jitsu and the Jed have been around for, you know, 10 plus years. Right. And
wow,
so
that, I guess you're right. That's that old.
Yeah,
that's definitely. Yeah, yeah. That boat's been out a while.
Maybe not quite that old. I know the Jed's been around for maybe 12 years at this
point. Wow, that's crazy. But that proves, like, yeah. I always say, when you do a really good job with a design, they have that lifespan like that.
Well, they definitely do, and this is not to say that the Jitsu and the Jed are bad boats. It's just that when you have market interest, right, and the Rockstar, because they're always coming out with new ones every couple of years, you're generating market interest in that particular style.
Every 6 months,
and then because there's that market, market interest, and then if we also think about our Keener program, which is teenagers, you know, what is the way that most really good teenagers get on the water first? It's through freestyle, right? Because their parents are able to take them to a whitewater park or a wave and watch them paddle.
It's
right?
safe too, it right? It's safe.
Yeah, and it's a lot safer form of kayaking than, you know,
exactly.
calling up Wade Harrison to take their kid down the green, you know?
Yeah, I'm going to talk to Wade this weekend. It's like +9. He'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly.
But then you could always go to Rock Island and just have a great session and just work it on moves. I mean, it's definitely fun.
And yeah. I think, you know, and if you really think about the top end paddlers out there, they all have some freestyle experience, you know, like the people that are at the top of the sport. Yeah. That goes to show you that there's a lot more to kayaking than just going down the river. Yes. So where people get really good at going down river and sending big nasty boofs, but then have a really bad roll. You know, I think a lot of times what happens is people get really into creeking because it's super fun. Right. It's super fun to run waterfalls.
That is true. It's super fun to send a booth.
But if we think about all of those things, they require edge transitionings and, you know, in a lot of scenarios, especially in the Southeast, you really don't want to find yourself upside down. And so
that's definitely true.
You don't find yourself upside down very often. And so you see like that core green group, like your KLCG guys that are stern squirting and splatting everywhere and flipping over, and you know they're getting their roll practice in. But there is a large contingency of people that do creek that only go down river, right? And
I see what you're saying.
Only go down river in their creek boat, yeah. And so they're not getting that time upside down or the confidence. I would say it's probably more the confidence, right? And so when they do find themselves upside down, then you know they're skipping steps, you know they're. You know, trying
they,
rolls
they
before
panic.
They're fully set up. You know,
they're
whatever.
In panic mode yeah, when they're upside down.
Panic
correct?
Mode. Yeah,
yeah. I see what you're
and
saying.
So I think that's why freestyle can be and slicey boating. You know, whatever the case may be, I think that's one reason why that's something that people really should get into as
or even half
starting
slice,
that
correct?
Trajectory up into yeah half slicing whatever. You wanna find that comfort upside down and knowing that you can roll from any direction and from any time that blade engages, you wanna know that you can roll from anywhere. You and I are both kind of the same opinion that the back deck roll is the best thing ever. And
back deck roll guy, another one right here.
Yeah. Yeah. If I'm rolling, I'm rolling with momentum either direction. You know, I'm not gonna try to set up underwater and sit upside down and take a beating unless I have to. So.
Yeah, you know, I had this conversation many times with a lot of people that, and that's funny, but like a lot of the high level paddlers, they just kind of go with the momentum and you got to think about it. 90% of the time, it's usually a stern load or a back edge caught coming out of a drop. And it's quicker to whip.
Because we're leaning back because we're scared.
Yeah.
We want to lean back and we're
bow
scared.
Up, baby. Bow up. Yeah. Well, that's pretty good, man. We'll go ahead and kind of switch gears here. You know, I know that Katie there, the last time she was paddling, she had some new level 6 gear and it made me grab my, it made me drag my old level 6 hat out from the archives that I got at Golly Fest one year.
Yeah.
I couldn't even believe I still had it. It looks pretty rough, but you know, Casey says I look like a DJ. Like I'm like, I'm the mouse. I don't know. Fat Boy Slim. Yeah, I'm just Fat Boy. I don't have the slim. I'm just Fat Boy DJ. But Funk Sure Brother, whatever that song was. But it's like, so I got my level 6 here. Go ahead and tell me what have you seen new from those guys? Because they are available here in the U.S. I have seen level 6. Their spray skirt looks really good. Maybe you could go into more.
Yeah, so, you know, Katie and her brother Joel both paddle for level 6 and have for some – quite some time I think one of the things that I've been most impressed by is their Ace spray skirt. They've recently changed up from just gluing the rand on to actually stitching it. And it looks really hardy. It's like a hardy skirt. And the rand is very, like, for those who are familiar with the Seal spray skirts, the rand is very similar in shape and size to the Seal spray skirt rand, but at a fraction of the cost. I mean, at a price point wise, there's not another company that's making a randed skirt in that price point.
What are they retail for?
I can't recall what they're retailing for, but I believe they're under $200 US. So
that is a really, for a high quality rand.
Yeah. And it comes with a small plastic removable implosion bar as well. So
nobody uses those things.
No, but
junk.
You know. But
do you believe in those an implosion bar?
You know
skirts blow from the inside out mostly. 80% of the time a skirt's blowing out.
Yeah. I'm gonna go ahead and tell you that I've never actually used an implosion bar skirt, so I don't know. But
they look cool.
That tells you how much that I don't know about all that. But I mean, it's a removable piece from it, so it's it looks pretty, you know, very functional from that standpoint as well. And then one of the things that I really like about what they've done with that skirt is similar with that palm skirt that they did for Dagger, the inertia skirt.
Mm-hmm.
There's a rubberized texture at the top of the tunnel, so that thing doesn't slide up and down on your body all day.
Yep. And just for people listening, that Dagger spray skirt, what's it called? The Iridium? What's it called?
The Inertia.
I like Iridium better, but you know, what he's talking about, that's actually a palm skirt, and I have one also. It's really good. Yeah. And I think it comes in a really good price point. Also, it's a rand palm skirt, and you're talking about the top, the only drawback that I did, you know, complain about was the massive Dagger logo right between the legs. It's like I was overcompensating for something. I look like such a fanboy if I have that Dagger helmet and that Dagger spray skirt and a Dagger boat. Jesus, I look like such a fanboy. I would have done the logo, but I would have made it more subtle.
Call me a fanboy. I got the helmet, the skirt, and the boat. I'm wearing it.
It's just that Dagger logo was just too big.
I don't really think it's too big, honestly.
Did you think it was too big?
You know, no.
Well, there you go.
No. You know me. I'm flashy.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely had a lot going on, but I love the skirt. Dude, it's really good. That was a really good skirt.
Yeah, it is a good skirt. I got two of them, and I've got one set aside for like personal paddling and one for teaching. The skirt that I've been using for teaching, it gets a lot of wear and tear, you know, when you empty a boat over top of your boat, that type of thing, it wears skirts out pretty quickly. And as Wade knows, when you're paddling a lot, your gear never fully dries out. And that's when it really starts to break down. And so far, this thing has held up very well this summer. I've been very impressed with it. So again, I have a pretty interesting point of view. Like, if I can get a full season out of a piece of equipment, I'm very happy. You know,
Whatever. You're probably 3 months out of this. We call him Box Fresh because he's always got something new. The last time I seen him, guess what? He was pulling out a brand new dry suit and a brand new pair of boots or something. I'm like, look at this guy, Box Fresh, baby. He landed on the scene.
Well,
I was like, didn't you just have some shoes like 5 months ago?
Well, you know, the hardest part about shoes is, you know, if they stay wet all the time, they fall apart.
Well, you know, and on the flip side, what he could tell me is like, well, when you use them every day, you know, my shit never wears out. You know why? Because it sits mostly in the garage. I haven't broke a paddle in 12 years. And you find out you go like about once a year.
You know, and I, for that reason, you know, to that point, you've actually talked a fair amount about paddles recently. I switched to paddling with fiberglass Warners again, just, you know.
And which Warner do you like the best, by the way? Because I know where you're going.
You know, for going down river, definitely the Surge. But for play boating, I like the Player a lot. So
okay. And you went to fiber, and what is your main reason for going to fiberglass?
So it's a couple fold. One, you know, if you're teaching, what's the thing that happens often that you have to do? You have to get out of your boat quickly, depending on what the scenarios are, you know, And sometimes you have to toss your paddle up on the bank. And would you rather toss a double diamond up on the bank? Or
a Lettman Extreme 70. Hit me up if you need to know where to get some.
Yeah. Who's a fanboy now?
Dude, you know how much you should see me getting out of my boat lately. I'm like leaning over, making sure it's lined up. Stay. When I had a powerhouse, I would javelin throw it. I would swim before I'd throw my Lettman.
You know, I've seen a few of them around. I've never actually paddled with one, but
well, I know you haven't because you don't own one of those either.
Yeah. But I have tried a forward set G Power blade.
Very comparable.
Looks pretty similar.
Mm-hmm. Except they have have aluminum around the tips.
Yeah, and that was something I wasn't super keen on with that particular style. But I can tell you,
you're a straight shaft paddling guy, though.
With that G. I'll paddle with anything, you know.
But did you not like the blade shaft, forward?
The blade forward is
great. I mean, I guess what they call is a forward crank, I think is the proper term, where the crank bend.
I thought the forward crank was great. I didn't really like the aluminum tips. I couldn't get behind that idea, but I can tell you that it was interesting. And I'm sure this is something that you probably like about your Lettman as well, is having a high performance paddle that doesn't have that big old thick blade that you're stabbing down into the water. It just kind of slices through, and the dexterity on the paddle is super fast, and it just kind of whips around in the water when you want to move it around.
Yeah, the transfer of power of the very long, it's more of a long, slender blade, and the transfer of power is very clean compared to my Surge. I have two Surges, and I got the Surge really on your recommendation, and I definitely agreed, because I come out of the Adachi. And you kept, about the Surge.
Well, we were both paddling an Adachi for a while. You know, one of the other big reasons for switching to the fiberglass paddles is, again, when you paddle a lot, if you're paddling for 4, 5, 6 hours a day, every day, like, puts a lot of stress and wear and tear on your body as well. And, you know, the flex of the fiberglass paddles.
Those Surges have a lot of deflection in the shaft and blade. I'll hit rocks here in the Southeast, as you were talking about. You know, you can hit a rock and it just kind of like bounces, and then you almost use a spring effect off of it. I mean, they do wear down. Warners do wear down fast, but that's a good thing. I'd much rather wear down than break that or break my damn joints.
That's right. But getting back to the question that you asked as well, there are pieces of equipment that have come out from Level 6 that are interesting. They've had a couple of upgrades to their dry suits and their to their dry tops. They've got like a new waistband cinching system that seems to be better than what they used to have. They used to have 4 individual straps with buckles on them, like a tri-glide buckle, and then they would all Velcro down to the middle, and they've moved to something that's more reminiscent of what you're seeing from other companies.
Like a clip?
Not so much like a clip, but just more like a Velcro piece on the tunnel.
What's the name of the dry suit?
Gracious, they have one called the Odin that came out last year, which is a front zip.
Yeah.
And then I believe the Emperor dry suit is the kind of back zip suit. And one of the things that's maybe a little hokey, but also super cool, is on the inside pocket right there underneath the Level 6. So if you scroll up just a little bit, keep scrolling up to the other picture. If you look right underneath the Level 6 logo, there's a fleece pocket right there in the dry suit. So you can actually put your hands in that fleece pocket while you're standing around scouting. Yeah. Which is pretty sweet. So.
Oh, I like that.
Fleece pocket. Yeah.
So it's got a built in fleece pocket, dude. That's cool.
Yep. Yeah.
That's nice for everybody looking.
When you're walking around, that's a really cool feature. And then you can see the new waist belt below it. It's got, 2 different points of contact. So if you go up to the picture that you were just on just a second ago, so if you look there, it's actually not one singular piece there. There's actually two pieces that are tightening independently of one another, but one Velcro piece there. You know, it seems to tighten very well. I borrowed one of Joel's dry tops here recently, wore it. Now, it was a very comfortable fit, and it felt very comparable to, kind of like an IR level type of dry top, it was, you know, it, I would say it very much fits into that same category. So
it looks good. I'm looking at it online right now, and it's the Empire dry suit. If you guys want to go check that out on level six, I think it's level6.com, and it's the Empire dry suit. It looks really good, dude. It looks like they've also added like a lot of padding in the shoulder. Like, I wouldn't say it's padding. It looks to be like a more durable material for like carrying boats. Because I put, you know, we put our boats on our shoulder, you know, that's kind of kayakers do. We lay our boats on our shoulder and that rim's rubbing. It looks like they've kind of thought that out. Because these are all paddlers. Like, these are a lot of paddlers that work there from what I understand, right?
Yeah, I mean, so Stig is a paddler. The owner of Level 6 is a paddler. You know, Kevin, you know, the guy that's, you know, doing a lot of the, you know, products and stuff like that. He's a paddler. Pat Quinney is also a paddler, you know. So they're full. They're chock full of paddlers as they're making decisions on equipment and and gear and things like that. Those guys are putting, you know, kind of like that mindset behind the gear, which is really cool. So it's been neat to see those changes happening, and, you know, hopefully they'll be able to continue to do well.
Yeah. Looking at it, man, it looks really good. Like, and I love the colors. It looks like they've got it in, like, I love bright colors on the river. You know, why somebody do a black dry suit is beyond me.
I mean, I've owned a black dry suit.
I know
before.
The Devil's Club is the one I'm talking about, but I just love those kind of very vibrant, you know, those neon green or really bright orange or yellow. I want to be seen, man. The level six stuff looks nice. And I know I was talking to Katie when she was down here, and I've always been interested in those guys. I met them, I think one year they were at Golly Fest and they gave me a hat. But I met those guys. It looked like a really cool group of guys. They all seem really nice and very, like, knowledgeable of the product and stuff. And, you know, I just love it when I meet paddlers that, you know, are doing things for the industry like Level 6 is. So, yeah. So if everybody gets a chance, go over to Level 6 website and look at their skirts and their dry suits. That's what I'm trying to find. Where's their skirts? I want to look at that. What you call it?
It's the Ace Spray skirt. Yeah.
Yeah. Look at that. Wow, dude, it's $185 US.
Yeah, it's
you're right. That is a really good price point. Wow, a stitched RAN, just what Casey was going on about. They stitch their RAN where a lot, I guess it's glued and stitched.
I believe it would.
What is this thing, Casey?
That's the implosion bar. Mm. So there's a sleeve that implosion.
How big is your implosion bar?
It's big enough.
Good enough.
So but there is a pocket that thing slides in and out of, you know, underneath the bottom of the spray deck. So
we won't play all that. But. No, it looks nice. It looks like a nice piece of gear. Definitely. Like I said, I just looked at what Katie had on, and that's the first time. They are available here in the U.S. They just don't have much of a foothold. A lot of people, they're like, oh, I ordered my NRS or my, you know, my IR or whatever, and they think that's their only options. These can easily be shipped out of Canada.
Well, I think, you know, I think the thing too is, like, you know, NRS, IR, they have brand recognition, and Level 6 definitely feels foreign to some people. But I would say that the build quality is comparable to that NRS, you know, IR level of equipment for sure. So I can tell you that Katie likes her stuff. I mean, she's got, you know, some dry tops and shorty dry tops that are a couple of years old that are still plenty dry, you know, and for someone that paddles a lot, that's saying something, you know? So,
yeah, well, there you go. What helmet are you using right now?
Oh man. So when I'm teaching, I'm using a Sweet Strutter because the river here is ultra, ultra wide and you cannot get out of the sun. So it's really nice to have the bill.
Why don't you run the visor like I used to on your helmet, like the cool kids do?
See, I'm not fast enough. I'm not fast enough to rock the moto look, you know.
You want to know why I don't have a visor now? Because wait till you get worked in one good hole.
Because you broke it.
Like everybody does. I'm like, I'm not buying another visor. You have to have a stockpile of those things. They break off way too easy.
But, I'd worn a rocker that I owned
really good
to
helmet.
Teach in, and is still the one that I prefer to paddle hard white water in. Mm-hmm. If I'm paddling harder white water, I'm definitely going to wear a rocker. But teaching the Strutter because of its cut it's not as hot of a helmet to wear if you're in the sun all day.
Yeah.
You know, and so again, we're in a river that is known for being particularly safe in the way of environmental hazards. It's not very deep, it's very deep. It's not very shallow. Mm-hmm. So you don't have the, thought process of I'm going to hit my head on a rock every time I flip over. Yeah. It's more of a, I'm going to take the deepest lines and I'll probably not touch a rock all day. It's going to be great.
Awesome. Random question. Yeah. Do you wear nose plugs with your helmet?
No, sir. No nose plugs.
Why is that?
If you're getting worked in a big enough feature, they're going to come off.
Okay. I wear nose plugs. I wear nose plugs when I loop.
That's okay. That's fine.
Oh, okay.
To each their own.
Yeah, good answer. Damn it. I was trying to sucker him into going on about nose plugs.
I figured you'd be like,
the way you smell, you should wear nose plugs.
No, man. I think if you're probably like learning how to roll and you're spending a lot of time upside down, it'd be mm-hmm. a great way to keep from having nose infections or nasal infections, but yeah, like,
definitely.
Or sinus infections. But, I think for me, I've always kind of had the strategy of humming while I'm underwater, and I don't ever seem to get like that huge jet of water. Up my nose.
This is an interesting concept. So, elaborate more on humming underwater.
So when I upside down, if I'm play boating, I just kind of hum with my mouth closed, and it creates a little bit of vibration and like a little air pocket in your nose, and I don't get a lot of water up my nose.
This is a very interesting concept. I have not thought of this. You know what I normally do?
I can't take credit for it. This is something that I learned from a good paddling friend, Wayne Dickert. So he used to run the NOC kayak school back when I was a kid.
A guy named Wayne Dickert talking about humming.
Humming.
Well, there you go. What I normally do is just kind of like cinch up. And a lot of times I blow out like right when I'm getting worked. And that's how I've been when I don't have it. I only run nose plugs if I know I'm play boating all day, if I'm doing it.
Right.
I mean, if I'm running a creek, I like being able to have that breathing through my nose. I try not to get in a habit of mouth breathing, even though I might look like a Neanderthal mouth breathing. I don't want knuckle dragging mouth breathing. I like to breathe through my nose and out through my mouth. Yeah. I don't like the fact of having that closed off.
And for me, I think that's one other reason why I don't like wearing them is, it's hard for me to catch my breath again. So
yeah, I think that it can promote that bad habit of like breathing through our mouths a lot of times.
And if you're falling back over, it's going to mean that you're getting a big breath of water.
Well, man, I guess we've went a little over an hour and something. He cut me off again.
I didn't cut you off. I got a low battery warning.
There we go. Yeah, man, I definitely, Casey, man, I appreciate you coming on and chatting with me here. I think anything else you want to talk about? Anything else you got? Secrets? Tell me a secret.
Any secrets? Oh, man. Secrets. I don't like toe tethers.
Don't go on about it. Damn it. This guy has toe tethers.
I don't like toe tethers.
For everybody out there, I like toe tethers. I just want you to use them properly if you got them on. Casey,
I'm just making fun of you. I don't personally use one. But that doesn't mean that you can't learn how to use one properly, and it can't be an exceptional tool. I am of the same opinion.
I'm an exceptional tool.
I know you are.
Hey, what kind of vest you running right now, buddy?
So personally, in my personal time as I'm paddling, I'm wearing still a green jacket and or blue jacket. When I'm working,
explain what the blue jacket is.
So the blue jacket is basically a green jacket without the sewn in belt, like rescue quick release belt.
Okay.
And it also doesn't have that webbing loop up front. And it's using nylon material around the edges of PFD. But, in the grand scheme of things, I really don't think it's saving a ton of weight. But the design, the pockets, everything is the same. It's just different materials. And some of the features are not included with the vest. So you have to buy a quick release belt to go with it.
Okay. But it's probably cheaper.
It's still cheaper to buy the blue jacket over the green jacket. And, honestly prefer the colors that options that you get, and you get the cool little Lotus logo on the back that's colored so as cool. Well.
Mine does have that.
Yeah,
it's awesome, man. Yeah. So, kind of like a throwback. Yeah. I love that Lotus symbol on the back. So does Level 6 make a jacket too? They don't.
No, so they don't make a PFD. They've partnered with a company called Salus up here, and they've done like a special edition PFD for Level 6, but currently they don't make one. So,
okay. I was just curious. Yeah, I think I'd seen you last time I seen you. I think you still had your green jacket on. I didn't know if you went with some Canadian brand. What is it, Salus?
No,
I've seen that brand a lot, by the way, that brand of life vest. Salus?
Yeah, so they I think they're probably better known for like sailing and like leisure boating. Yeah, but they do make whitewater PFDs and rescue PFDs as well. And you see them a lot up here, and they look like good PFDs. I mean, I've never owned one or used one before, but again, it's mainly just from a standpoint of I'm not familiar with it and it seems foreign, right? So, I really like the fit of the Astral jackets. I think they're great. And, you know, so with that, that's, you know, it's hard to want to move to other options out there, but
it's what you get used to, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I think you get a little bit of brand loyalty as well. Like my experience with like customer service with Astral has always been really good. You know, I think they've always been pretty fair through that process as well. So it's hard not to like people that, you know, treat you well, especially through that process, you know.
but the green jacket is one of the best jackets I've ever used. I mean, I'll contest that. I've been using the Kokatak Hustler R here recently. Yeah. So I do still go back and forth to my green jacket and that Kokatak. They both have their plus and minuses. And I will do like a comparison video. But the new Kokatak's really good. I don't know if you've tried out any of those.
I haven't worn it. I've worn it. I haven't paddled in it. But just in wearing it, I could tell that it's going to be a good PFD. You know, usually you get a pretty good sense when you put something on of if you're going to like it or not. And so, like, there's definitely been times where I put on PFDs and I took them right off. And I was like,
that is true. I've been there on that, buddy. Yeah, because I think they learn from that, you know, that Transformer Optimus Prime or whatever that one they had. It looked terrible.
And the funny thing is I think there are people that really do like it. I think it just
looks like overkill to me.
Well, I think the thing is too, is you have to think about a person's body habits. What are they shaped like? Right. And I have a short torso. And so having a short torso, that PFD sits right up underneath my chin, you know? And so I think that's where Kokatak aced their new design, is that it's not sitting up in your chin if you have a short torso. Because you have some people that might be 5'2", but will have long torsos, and that PFD will fit really well. But then you might have somebody that's like 6 foot, like myself, but most of their height comes from their legs, right? And so a PFD like the green jacket that fits low, that you can tighten down low, and has a lot of different adjustment points that keeps it out of your face and chest area, is really nice to wear and feels a little bit more nimble and more low profile.
It's really good. The adjustment on that is true. The adjustment on the green jacket, it's like, that's kind of like their signature. They're kind of known for that. They have so much, the up and down adjustment, the pulling, everything just adjusts really well on it.
Yeah. So I think the only qualm with the green jacket is potentially the fact that it has the same amount of flotation in each of the different sizes, right? Like if you're, you know, a small, you know, small, medium type person, you're going to have the same flotation as the person who's wearing the extra large size.
Explain that. What do you mean? Same.
So the pounds of flotation within the PFD is the same. So I think it's like roughly 18 pounds of flotation or something akin to that. Or 16.5, yeah, there you go, 16.5. But that is across all the different sizes.
Oh wow, I see what you're saying. So it's 16.5. If I'm a small, medium, medium, large, large, extra large. If I'm a large, extra large, I would need a little more than 16.5, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, and who knows how much you actually need, but I think that could be the only qualm that you actually could have with the green jacket. And you know, I'm not sure if the Hustler does the same, you know, with their pounds of flotation, and I don't know what the reasoning is behind that. I don't have, you know, there's that Lips logo. I like it. But
yeah, I do too.
But you know, so I'm not a life jacket or PFD designer, so I don't know much about the pounds of flotation, but I've definitely heard people within the industry that do have a fair amount of knowledge say that that is a qualm that they have with that PFD. And you know, so that's definitely something that's always stuck out to me. And I know for certain that the Optimus, or the Maximus Prime, I think is what it's called, by Kokutat, does change the amount of flotation per size. So, and I think that is something that could be addressed or should be addressed for sure.
Yeah.
Because I mean, again, you're the size of the person that it's supposed to be floating will change. So
that's actually a good point, dude. And not a lot of people think about, I mean, I'd like to get someone from Astron and kind of like break that down for us. That'd be nice to get someone from an actual like life vest maker to see like, and see what their thinking was, because you got a good point, you know, 16.5, and maybe that's just the kind of like the minimal you can get away for Coast Guard approved or something. I really don't know a lot about it. I'm familiar with it, probably like yourself. I'm familiar with it, but I don't know a lot about like how the Coast Guard approval system works and the different sizings on the life, different flotation and all that. I don't know.
Right. But for whatever reason, the number 18 is sticking out in my head for like the larger sizes of the Kokutat PFD. And so, or something akin to that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that, and then you also have to take into consideration, what are you keeping in the PFD as well? Like what kind of safety gear do you have? How heavy is it? Like that also is going to affect that how well it floats you as well.
How much crap, you know, you guys that are putting beer cans and, you know, full on beer and all that down in your, you know, you don't promote beer drinking on the river. I know.
I don't, I am not part of Team Tecate. So,
Hey man, let's not get those guys fired up. They'll light my DMs up before this episode's over.
But they're all good guys. They're all good guys.
They're funny. I'd like to get them on just for the comedic aspect, buddy.
It will be one of your better episodes, I have no doubt.
So yeah, I'm looking over, and it looks like the
buoyancy is at 16.
Wow.
Oh, it's 16 all the way across. Okay, dude, interesting.
That is very interesting. What I have pulled up here for everybody, you know, listen, I pulled up the Kokutat. This is the Kokutat Hustler Rescue Vest. And, you know, on Casey's point there, now the Optimus Prime might have been different, but the vest does the same thing, and it's actually 0.5 pounds lighter flotation. They've got 16, even up to extra large. So this is something, this, you know, you brought up an interesting thing here, because this is something I'd like to dig deeper in with someone in the life vest industry.
Right.
And I'm thinking, okay.
Yeah.
Let's see what the hell's going on with these Kokutat vests.
But yeah, I would be curious to see what that answer would be as well. And again, you know, it's probably as simple as having a conversation with someone to be able to provide that information. It's just something I'm not familiar with. So
yeah,
but well, I've definitely heard. So
yeah, well, man, I'm not going to keep any more of your time. I think we're going around 2 hours total. So, you know, this will all be interesting, but I could talk to you for hours. Like I can, man, you're a wealth of information. You're like an encyclopedia. I don't know.
I don't know about all that, man. But
well, I'm like the encyclopedia of a lot of useless knowledge. I'm like that guy.
Me too.
Tell you the fuel tank on a 96 Taurus.
Nice. And I'm glad you can tell me that.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, we really need to know that. Well, man, Casey, man, hey, it was good talking to you again, buddy. And I appreciate you coming on. Anything you want to say, any closing thoughts or anything?
Oh man, come to the Ottawa River. It's if you want to play on big water, again, like, you know, I think one of the things that gets overlooked here, because you hear the statement time and time again, is that this river is the best freestyle river in the world. The river running, it's exceptional as well. There are moves that I guarantee that most paddlers will not hit every time.
Awesome.
It's a very different style of kayaking, and it's a very neat thing that you can do. And you know, the fact is the river is an hour and a half away from Ottawa, so catching a flight to Ottawa from the US is very easy. You know, flying out of Atlanta, it's roughly a 3-hour flight or something like that.
Wow.
I don't know. I think it's somewhere around 70 to 80 cents on the dollar.
All right, pick me up in Ottawa,
Canada. Plane, as well.
I'm booking a ticket actually on the air right now. I'm gonna book
okay,
the ticket.
Very cool. Yeah. So if you book that ticket, I'll let you come on up.
All right, man. Anything else? Yeah, I definitely agree with you that the Ottawa, you know, is one of those top freestyle destinations in the world. And even if you're not a freestyle paddler, I always recommend people try to get on some big water. I love paddling big water. I love it when I can put a full blade in the water, Casey.
Wade, you can put a full blade in the water and never take it out to an entire rapid and not touch any rocks.
I love it. I love it. Yeah.
You all can right, just man. Sit there and feather it forward and backwards.
Crossbow switches. Can we do some crossbow switches?
Listen, crossbow switches are so clean here because you're never going to hit a rock.
There we go. All right, Casey, man, I'm going to go ahead and jump off here and let all you right. get back to it.
Cheers.
Thanks a lot, man. It's nice talking to you and everybody. This is Casey Jones and, you can check him out on YouTube, maybe, if you get him to post more, Instagram and Facebook and Wilderness Tours. So, yeah, thanks a lot, Casey. Nice talking to you, buddy. Talk to you later, man.
Good talking to you, too.
All right, see you, buddy.